You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, we made it to a Friday. It's hour two, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. UCLA head football coach Chip Kelly will join us coming up. Pac-12 is back, but it doesn't look like we're going to expand the playoffs, and it doesn't look like the Pac-12 is that concerned about not being included with the possibility of playing for a national championship. But we'll talk to the UCLA head coach. And once again, the information I found out about the Pac-12, I told you a couple of weeks ago when I was told they were going to start. Originally, it was going to be Halloween. Now it's the following week. But the news was everybody, every athletic director, every president, they had to be in unison, presidents, that it had to be unanimous, that everybody wanted to come back and try to play. Unlike the Big Ten, where there were a couple of dissenting votes, there were some presidents who did not want to come back and play. But there was some arm twisting there. But the news was everybody in the Pac-12 was in agreement unanimously that they were going to play football. You probably have Oregon that may be able to compete for a Final Four spot, at least at the preseason rankings. They were a top 10 team. It's been a while since we've had a team from the Pac-12 in the Final Four. Go back to 2016 with Washington. Of course, Oregon winning a national title. But I think it's an afterthought for that commissioner, Larry Scott, if they're going to be getting a team with, you're going to play six games, then you're going to have that seventh game, which will be, you know, first place versus first place. And by then, are you going to pass the sight test, the look test? You got to have a great team that's going to emerge. And, you know, this is what Ohio State is banking on, that you're going to get started a little earlier. You're going to pass the sight test and you're going to be able to be included because you're Ohio State. You know, you don't have that legacy vote with anybody in the Pac-12. You know, USC used to have that, but you don't have that. Washington and Oregon, sort of. But it looks like, you know, you probably get the SEC with two teams in the Final Four is more likely than the Pac-12 getting one. You might even say three teams from the SEC as opposed to one Pac-12 team. But you have a great team out of the Big 12. Do you have a great team in the ACC? Of course you do with Clemson. Is there anybody else who might step in there? Plus, they're playing 10 games. At least that's what the schedule is. And to play an extra game or extra two games or three games, that's a big advantage here. Can you open up this contract, this TV contract, and say, let's go to eight just this year, just to give some revenue back? I don't think anybody's going to complain about it, given what's gone on in the last 6 months, 7 months, if you're able to do that. But if you do open it up, I don't know if you're coming back to four. And you might say, well, that's, you know, that's a good thing. I always get nervous, though, when we keep adding. Like, March Madness, if you don't make March Madness, it's an embarrassment. Because, what do we have, 68 teams now? And then you're going to get to college football, and you're going to go, okay, now it's 16 teams. If we go to 8, you're going to go to 16. Because everybody's going to realize the same thing. When we had the BCS, and I remember many, many times on this show saying, expand it. Just have four teams in there. BCS, they'd say, no, you can't do it. No, this is, we're staying with this. Then they go to the Final Four and everybody's like, oh, this is awesome. Look at all the money we're making. And then they're going to do the same thing for 8 and then they'll go to 16. Hopefully they would cap it at 16, but I don't know if they will because they'll look at all the money. The question is, can you pull this off? Can you still have bowl games? Will fans be able to travel? You know, those are things that are really interesting here. So, As we look at the Pac-12 this year, I think there's a foregone conclusion that they will not be part of the conversation. Yeah, McLevin.
I mean, don't Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Ohio State, it feels like those four are just on a collision course.
Yeah.
Every year, especially this year, though.
Yeah. But, you know, they have a tradition here as well. Like, you want to make sure if you take a chance on a team that, like, Notre Dame is not ready to compete, from what I'm told, with Clemson. Just not. Now, top 10 team, not ready to compete. Good team, solid team, not a great team. And you don't want to get in there and have a blowout. And that's where you have to kind of pass the sight test here. All right, 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle with DP Show. Say good morning to Peacock, our TV partners, and our great radio affiliates around the country. The Lakers wanted some free throws. They got some free throws last night as they picked up the victory. 28 of 35 from the line. Anthony Davis shot 14 free throws. LeBron shot 14. I wondered, would he be in double figures from the free throw line? And if he was, the Lakers were going to win the game. Now, the Nuggets head coach, Mike Malone, took a little jab at his coaching counterpart, Frank Vogel, and had this to say after the game.
Late in the game, I thought Jamal Murray attacked the basket a few times where it appeared to be contact. So we'll watch the film and we'll send our clips in and we'll reach out to the NBA and kind of make our points noted. And whether them going through the proper channels affected tonight or not, I have no idea. The NBA does a great job of listening, and then hopefully, you know, you hope that next game, maybe some of those fouls are called.
I like how he says the NBA does a good job of listening. It was his way of saying, well, I guess I got a lobby here. Maybe a little too late, but down 3-1. Battle of the beard versus the mustache was one-sided last night. The beard, Ryan Fitzpatrick, led the Dolphins past Gardner Minshew in the Jags here. And, you know, two quarterbacks have a lot of similarities. Fitzpatrick, 7th-round pick out of Harvard. Minshew, a 6th-round pick out of Washington State. Neither had great expectations coming into the league. And Fitzpatrick has been Mr. September, but, you know, never really able to shed that image of a late-round pick who seemed to be overachieving. And the same with Gardner Minshew. No matter how good he is this year, if Jacksonville ends up with 3 wins and they're on the clock for, you know, one of those two top quarterbacks, he's probably going to be looking at a team drafting his successor. Minshew just starting out, but you get the feeling that he's going to make a strong case to play. But the question is he viewed as a franchise quarterback? Fun to watch last night, but you know, I was flipping around with the Lakers and the Nuggets. Also, South Alabama UAB, got to watch a little bit of that as well. And then you know, the Thursday night game. Is there a great college game this weekend, Paulie?
Great, no, but there's a ton of good. Florida, Ole Miss. Here's my 5-star. Kentucky covering versus Auburn. Kentucky, Auburn. slip that in there. Louisville, Pitt, Mississippi State, LSU. Mississippi State's decent this year. Right. Texas Tech, Army, Cincinnati. That's 2 ranked teams, by the way, Army and Cincinnati. Right. How about that? Right. Georgia, Arkansas. Ooh, not good. Arkansas, not good, Dan. Don't put in your hopes on that.
When's the last time Arkansas was good?
The Mallett era, the Joe Adams, that kick returner.
Like, when were they really good?
Bobby Petrino. Oh, really good?
Yeah.
70s. I mean, really good. Well, the Darren McFadden days, they're pretty good, but not like national title good. I mean, probably the Darren McFadden days.
Yeah.
Alabama, Missouri, Florida State, Miami.
Yeah, that's good.
Night game.
Yeah.
Tennessee, South Carolina.
I'm interested in that as well. The new and improved Tennessee Volunteers.
Yeah. By the way, the head coach of Tennessee just got a raise without playing any football games this year.
So that's Pruitt.
Yeah.
You got a raise.
Based off recruiting.
Yeah.
And then that's about it. That's a nice slate.
You know, I was talking to my college football source last night. And, you know, we got around to the process of, you know, when you get a player or you lose a player that's right under your nose in your area of the country, and then you lose him. And I said, how does that happen? And so my source said, well, let's say you're recruiting somebody who's in a state where there's another big school, but you find somebody who might be a booster in that area, maybe a former player, maybe a friend of a booster, and then that's where you get to a high school coach. You want to make sure that that player knows that you're going to take care of him. And I go, okay, well, how do you take care of a player? Well, let's say his parents want to go to every game. All right, we'll make sure we take care of that. He said the head coach is never involved in this stuff. It's always an assistant who will let somebody know, let somebody know, let somebody know. And then that's how you get these players. And I said, but do coaches get involved? He said, there are two coaches right now in college football, and the word is they're sloppy. You know, you got to be buttoned up when you're going to go after a player. He goes, you know, it's not like SMU where you're just handing money. It's not like Eric Dickerson getting a car or Marcus Dupree getting a trailer or whatever he got for his mom. You know, this is a little bit more undercover, but you keep it away from the athletic department, the head coach. And he said, you know, sometimes a kid will come in and doesn't want anything, that he just wants to go to your school. But, you know, we keep, you know.
Oh, sorry.
He said, you know, everybody keeps an eye on everybody. He said, I will say this, the Pac-12 does not do this. Like, there was almost this agreement, I think, in the Pac-12 that they weren't going to give these crazy benefits to players or the families as well. I said, well, maybe they should.
It's reflected in the rankings, apparently.
Get some of those Silicon Valley guys to chip in.
Yeah.
Get Zuckerberg to boost up Cal or something.
But he said there are two coaches that are getting sloppy with their, you know, how they recruit. And he says, I can give you names. And I go, I'd rather you didn't. He goes, all right. But he said, I'll come back to this if these schools go on probation. But there are two schools that are sloppy right now.
Does the conference rhyme with messy she?
I'm not going to say that. I'm not saying anything. Okay. No, I'm just giving you some information there. That's all I'm doing. But, you know, this continues. I know we like to think that everybody is, it's about student athlete, and you still have to get, these players know, like these players get paid. Not, you know, what their value is, but you're going to get first class airfare. You're going to get hotel accommodations, tickets, making sure your family gets taken care of. You may need some money. He said some schools, once you get in, it's easier to take care of you with benefits. And I you know, I'm just fascinated with how this happens. But he said coaches don't get involved. And there were head coaches who got involved. There were people, and he was telling me this pipeline of coaches who coached under a great coach, legendary coach, and they all learned how to do it. They didn't do it as well as this guy did, but it was just kind of interesting that this does, you know, there are certain guys, certain schools that you just know. If they can get a guy, they'll go the extra mile to get that guy. There are certain schools where you're just going to go there. And so kind of interesting of how the whole process works there. You got to get to a guy, and then you might get to the high school coach who then gets whatever the message gets sent to the family and the player. Yeah, Paul.
If you watch that SMU 30 for 30 about the SMU in the 80s, it's the greatest picture you're ever going to see that defines college football. There's Eric Dickerson, who's 6'3", 220. He's still in high school, and he's standing in front of a gold Trans Am, the flashiest car you could possibly give the best running back in the country. And the word on the street was that A&M gave it to him because he had early committed to A&M. And then somehow the car went away, and he became an SMU Mustang.
Yep. Yeah.
He traded in for a better deal.
I think he just got straight cash, homie.
Yeah.
I think that's what he got. It's a story to keep an eye on. I keep wondering where Mike D'Antoni is going to end up. And I still think New Orleans is the best place for him. And, you know, but he hasn't won anything. I know that, you know, teams covet Mike D'Antoni because, you know, he's revolutionized offenses, but they haven't won anything. Now the talk is that maybe Philadelphia would be a landing spot, but numerous reports say that if he does go there, he doesn't want Joel Embiid. So what kind of offense are you running if you don't have Joel Embiid, your best offensive player there? And I think that's the interesting part of it. That roster makes me nervous. There's talent, but it just feels like it's a hot mess. And if you're Mike D'Antoni, I'd much rather go to a younger team in New Orleans. But it just feels like that was the destination. But, you know, Billy Donovan decided to go to Chicago. He had a younger team there and, you know, turned down the Philadelphia job, reportedly. So, and then if you get D'Antoni in Philadelphia, he wants to bring in James Harden. Now it gets really interesting because now you start to look at that roster and go, okay, James Harden, and how does it work with James Harden? Do you go small ball in Philadelphia here if you get rid of Joel Embiid? Yes, McLovin.
Give me a little Chris Paul action. I don't know how you pull it off.
No, Harden and Paul can't. They won't play together.
Right. If we don't get Harden, how about Chris Paul? I don't know if D'Antoni left it in good terms with him.
What happened with we? And I don't think Mike D'Antoni's on great terms with Chris Paul.
Probably not. Okay.
I don't think he threw himself in front of the door to say, don't let Chris Paul out, you know, when they traded him to Oklahoma City.
But all these teams with young, talented players who don't seem to try that hard, everyone's like, add Chris Paul. He'll, like, straighten him out.
Well, I do think Chris Paul would have made a huge difference with the Milwaukee Bucks because you need that guy who understands playoff basketball. He hasn't won anything, but he is tough. And he's a floor leader. And you need that this time of the year. You got to have that. That experience is really important. And Milwaukee was exposed in the playoffs. Because when they came up against a Heat team that had answers, that's when you have to have somebody regroup and say, hey, we're going to do this. They didn't have that. But Chris Paul, I'm going to guess, is on another team next year. You know, they talked about the Knicks. That's not nice to do that to Chris Paul. Like, he ends his career with the Knicks. Yes, McLovin.
I had one on Twitter the other day. How about Kemba Walker, who gets $35 million next year, straight up for Chris Paul, just to get some toughness and defense on the perimeter? Because the Celtics just, they can't cover anyone.
Chris Paul's been Kemba Walker's been a disappointment.
He's great offensively. Yeah. Very good offensive player.
Yeah, but he's been a liability. And I didn't see that happening. I thought, boy, that was just such a great sneaky pickup for that team. But he's been a disappointment.
Also, they need a center, too, in Boston, right? They seem to be getting... I don't know if that's because Bam is so good, but they don't have much in the middle.
I know, but can we decide if we need centers or not? Because when you don't have one, then you need one.
You tried to tell us Bam Adebayo is great, and we all four was like, oh, yeah, whatever.
I know.
And he is.
Oof. He is great. I mean, he was an all-star. You know, that's... But it gets... That's where you watch these games. If you just read or watch highlights, then you come away with... If people who are surprised with Tyler Hero didn't watch the Miami Heat during the regular season. Because if you do, then you see he's capable of doing some really great things there. Now, 37 points in a, you know, Eastern Conference final game? Maybe not. But people are going to discover the Miami Heat. If they make it into the finals, they're going to go, man, that Goran Dragic is fun. Hey. Yeah, that Duncan Robinson, he can shoot. Bam Adebayo played at Kentucky? I don't remember him. Well, if you watch the games, then you get a better sense of just how good these players are. And, you know, maybe they can put away the Celtics. I expect the Celtics to win this next game for some reason. But are we ready for the Miami Heat against the LA Lakers? Is America going to be excited for that? Now, imagine if LeBron had to go to Miami for these games.
That's what stinks.
How great would that be that this is an advantage for LeBron, that he doesn't have to go to Miami with that crowd that would be booing him and they would love to unload on him because he had the audacity. I love that the Heat fan go, hey, he left us to, you know, go to the Lakers. I said, he left Cleveland to go to you. So
it's like when college football, when your coach leaves and you get mad that some big school stole your coach and then you steal a coach from a smaller school.
Let me take a break. We'll talk to UCLA head coach Chip Kelly. Michael Thompson, the Lakers radio analyst, will join us coming up in an hour. I think during the live look-in on Peacock, it might be bratwurst time.
Happy birthday, Paul.
Yep. I think we need to unleash the hounds here, and I think those brats are ready to come off the Traeger. I got the homemade mustard out there, some kraut.
Celebrating Paul's birthday week.
Yes, it continues a week. That's right.
I might get into this.
Are you guys? Do you guys want to have brats right now?
Yes.
Okay. That was a rhetorical question. Yes. All right, well, it's going to take a break. Chip Kelly will join us coming up. It's 20 after the hour, and we'll get to your phone calls as well. This is the Dan Patrick Show. LegalZoom's been dedicated to helping you with the right solutions for more than 19 years. They've been partners of ours for, I think, 12 or 13 years. If you need a will, living trust to protect your family, or you want to start a business the right way with a DBA, LLC, nonprofit, or more, LegalZoom can help you do that as well. And it's easy to get started online. If you need guidance, they have a network of independent attorneys. They provide legal advice to ensure you're making the right choices. LegalZoom is not a law firm. That's good for a couple of reasons. They don't charge you by the hour, and you don't have to leave your home. Yes, Todd?
I love that it's not a law firm.
Thank you, Todd. Visit LegalZoom right now, and proven, reliable sources, resources for families and business owners everywhere during these unprecedented times. You want to make sure that you're doing it the right way so you don't start and then stop and then try to do it again. Visit LegalZoom.com today to take care of the important things you need to get done. LegalZoom.com. You need to make it legal. Make it LegalZoom.com. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at FoxSportsRadio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. This program brought to you by Mercedes-AMG. Be prepared for whatever comes your way. It's the all-new GT four-door coupe. Because life's a race, visit your local dealership for a test drive today. If you missed any of our interviews this week or any week from the Mercedes-AMG Man Cave, go to danpatrick.com. Watch and listen from inside the Mercedes-AMG Man Cave. Mercedes-AMG driving performance. Is it ever too early for a bratwurst? That's what I want to know. That's my big question. Because we got the grill fired up today. Granted, it's almost 10:30 in the morning, so this is reasonable. Let's bring in Chip Kelly, who joins us, the UCLA head coach. It's 7:30 your time. Is it too early for a bratwurst for you?
We do not have the grills fired up at the moment, but I can make a suggestion. So,
yeah, I think it sounds pretty good.
It does sound good.
When's the last time you tailgated?
Oh, God. I don't know.
You've never like gone through the parking lot at the Rose Bowl and then decided to just stop off and maybe grab a dog or say hello to some boosters?
There were some games I probably should have. Let me just stay here. I don't know if the next 16 minutes are going to be what I want it to be. So,
how do you explain what has happened here in the last 2 months, 6 weeks? I don't know. I mean, this is crazy.
It is. Well, the best thing is when you say it's 2020. Yeah. So anything is expected. You know, I think we all thought on August 11th that we weren't going to play. You know, there were some of our schools, obviously, that and it's different because it's different here. That's the one thing about COVID is that it's different in different parts of the country. So when you look at there are other people playing, well, it's not that bad in their state. And then there's other states where, you know, we were not allowed in our building till the beginning of this week. So we have not been in this building that I'm in right now. You know, our players had not been in a weight room since March until Monday.
So it's
different. So when people say, how come they're not playing? Well, there's different restrictions at the state level and the local level that prevented us from preparing our guys to play. So we understood when the decision was passed down in August because of the restrictions that a lot of us were on. So, you know, I think the rapid testing on a daily basis is the key, and that's what we hope will be able to get us to play on November 7th.
Is 6 weeks enough time to get ready?
Yeah, it's pushing it. You know, and I hear people say, how does it take 6 weeks? Well, because our players hadn't been really doing anything. You know, if our players in a normal year are with our strength coach during all of June and all of July, then you need 4 weeks of camp and you can go because they've had 8 weeks to get ready for camp. You know, there are some schools, us specifically the California schools, that haven't had the opportunity to do that. So we think 6 weeks will prepare us for it. But as you watch other leagues, and that's what we've done, watch other leagues, you're concerned. You know, and the concern is you look at all the injuries that have happened in the National Football League, and they had 6 weeks to ramp up, and the injuries that are an all-time rate, and they kind of rival when the strike season happened in 2011. You know, so there's a correlation there between how much time you have to prepare. And we're very cognizant of that. That's why I think they gave us 6 weeks, and we just have to be really smart with these 6 weeks that we have coming up here.
Yeah, I looked at what was happening in the NFL, and I gave my audience a heads up. I said, you're going to see soft tissue injuries because you didn't get that opportunity. You can't simulate, you know, a game. No matter how much you try, you can't. And so, I mean, how much of a concern is that going to be for you with your players?
I think it's a concern for all the coaches in our situation. And you talk to the coaches in the Big Ten that are 2 weeks ahead of us. You know, it's the same concern with all of us. If a player tests positive for COVID, he's out for whatever the time he has to quarantine. If he's asymptomatic, is it 14 days or 21 days, depending on what your league is. But if a guy pulls a hamstring, he could be out for 21 days also. So, and when you're playing a 6-game or 7-game regular season, if you're missing 3 weeks with a hamstring injury, it's like missing a season. So we have to be really smart in how we prepare our guys.
I don't know if it's better than spring football because you didn't get that opportunity for spring football. And last time we talked, we didn't think we were having fall football, but would you rather have this truncated 6-7 game schedule or roll the dice and try to play in the spring?
As long as it's safe. And I think what the key is the fact that we have daily testing. So if you tell me it's a safe environment and that every day we go to work out here, the guys we're working out against, we're positive that no one is carrying COVID, then then we want to play and we want to compete. And our players are excited about that. But they have the same concerns. Is it going to be a safe environment? And from what we understand with the new testing, they're starting to implement that. We're hopefully by next week that it will be. And if it's a safe environment, our guys want to play football. They want to compete. And we all want to do that. You know, spring ball's fun from a teaching standpoint, but you know, whoever wins the spring game, you know, for who gets burgers and who gets hot dogs is, or now bratwurst, we could add bratwurst, isn't really like playing against SC, you know?
And then you look at not, you know, you're getting started later, and can a team get into the Final Four conversation with the Pac-12?
Yeah.
And you're probably going to, you know, get X'd out. You're not going to have enough games and the time frame as well. And I don't know if you have a great team in the Pac-12 this year.
You're right on all points. And I don't know how it fits. I think at least there'll be a conversation, but you don't know. And there's so many unknowns. You know, the fact that you're getting all these congratulation phone calls on, hey, you guys are going to get to play. I'm like, well, we hope so. And they, what do you mean by that? I said, there's already been 21 games canceled. So, you know, we could get to the beginning of our season and then have games because of COVID and an outbreak at on a campus or at a school and have some of our seven games canceled. So we have a seven game season scheduled, but that doesn't mean we're going to get them all in. And, you know, you look at Houston, who's had five games canceled. You know, that I don't know how we would handle that. You know, if we start, we're playing a seven game season and you get five of them canceled. So I don't know. And I heard them say yesterday, the one thing that they came out with was that there's no threshold for games won to be bowl eligible. So I'd like to congratulate everybody in the Pac-12 on being bowl eligible. Right
now. Are we having regular bowl games?
I think they are, but I don't know. I don't think you can use the word regular at all in 2020. Okay, so what does that mean?
But
you may fly somewhere and play a game real quick, but then is the opponent playing with the same testing protocols that you have? And there's a lot more that goes into a selection. That selection Sunday will be very interesting. Like, we have to match up people that have the same testing protocols. So let's put this team against that team. Well, neither of the teams won a game. Don't worry about it. They're really good. So you don't know. You know, I hope that our testing protocol puts us at the top of the list for bowl selection. So,
well, maybe you'll face a Big Ten team that they would have the same testing.
I think they got the same testing, so that'd be great.
We're talking to Chip Kelly, UCLA head coach. What do you remember about Gardner Minshew at Washington State?
We didn't play against him because we missed him in the rotation. So I just watched him on film.
Oh, okay.
And was so thoroughly impressed, you know, just with his competitiveness, his decision making, how quick he was and how decisive he was in making decisions. And it's, you know, part of what Mike does with his quarterbacks. But, you know, he may have been one of the better ones to ever play in that system for him. And you're seeing him do it in the NFL. You know, it's, you know, last night wasn't a great night for him. But I know what he's done up until this point in time has just been kind of extraordinary, to be honest with you.
Best quarterback you ever faced?
Ooh.
Where you just didn't have an answer.
In the NFL, was Aaron Rodgers. You know, he just... There were times I think he was just smiling. Like, oh, you're going to play this coverage? I'll throw it here. Oh, you're going to play this coverage? I'll throw it here. All right, this one I'm going to keep the play alive for a little bit, and then I'm going to throw it. It kind of looks like I'm going right, but I'm going to throw it left. So, and I know Aaron, and it was a long day. At the college level.
And I still maintain, though, Coach, Aaron Rodgers makes, when he's great, he makes it look easier than any other quarterback I've ever seen. And that's bringing in a lot of quarterbacks. Rodgers, and I understand that feeling of what you must have because he just, at times he feels like he's playing chess and you're playing checkers with him.
I agree. And in the same note, I would put Russell Wilson in that same category because Russell can just beat you with his legs. And it's Russell's like, oh, you're going to be in coverage? I'll take off and run for 20. And then you never can hit him because Russell will never take a hit because he's so smart. And then he also just sticks the ball out for an extra yard just to add insult to injury every single time he goes out of bounds. And he's got the same – they both have the same passion for playing. So they're always up. They're always positive. They were difficult. At the college level for us, it was probably Cam. You know, when we played him in the national championship, because it was like the first time you ever see Cam in person, he looks like Charles Oakley and he's playing quarterback and you're like, oh my God, like this is the quarterback. You know, he's bigger than anybody we have on our defensive line. So, And then the combination of how well, the thing that impressed me the first time I saw Cam is how well he threw the ball. You would think, all right, this is Brandon Jacobs back there, and they're just going to run quarterback power all the time. But he can really spin it. He's one of the best. We played him in the NFL also. He's one of the best deep ball throwers I've seen. So, you know, Bill's got the Patriots are the real deal with Cam at quarterback.
But did you face Brady?
Yes.
And did you didn't come away with that same impression that you had with Aaron Rodgers?
No, let's not get into that.
Would you rather say something negative about USC right now?
No, we're just hopeful we can get on the field and play a game. We're all in a happy place right now. But Tom's phenomenal too. There's so many when they're playing at that high level. We played Peyton, and that was just a clinic. And you know, when you get to see those elite guys play, the Tom Brady's and the Russell Wilson's and Cam and Tom, it's hard to beat.
But you know,
that's why everybody says if you have a quarterback, you got a shot.
When Peyton goes to the line of scrimmage and you know on the sidelines that he knows what you're doing, like how intimidating or frustrating is that?
We played them in Denver my first year, and it was second down first down, and it was so close to the red zone. And you could tell as he caught the snap, he didn't like the route the receiver was running. So he immediately threw it in the ground like he was spiking the ball. And then he said something to the receiver, ran back to the line of scrimmage in a hurry-up mode, and threw a touchdown pass on us. And I was just like, anybody else would have tried that. Well, the receiver ran the wrong route. I'm going to extend this play and, you know, try to see if I can make something out of it. He was like, wrong, throws it in the ground, gets up, next play, touchdown. And I was like, wow, I've never seen that before. But he knew exactly what he wanted, and he got the look he wanted, and he knew he was going to score. That's very difficult to defend.
What about the defensive player? Peyton would talk about how Zach Thomas, like there's certain defensive players, they would just, whenever he called out something, he would go, look for the draw, you know. Mm-hmm. And he said he was one of the smartest players that he went against. Is there a defensive player that's the equivalent of Peyton or some of these other quarterbacks?
When I was there, it was Luke Kuechly. I mean, he could diagnose everything and anything. And you know, there were checks you put in that game, and he was calling out the check. I was like, that's the first time we've used that check. Like, how does he know that? Like, but he was just such an instinctive linebacker. You know, you try to do some things in terms of how you hand it off and make it look like a counter move, but you run an inside zone and you fool him once. You call it another time 35 plays later, and you didn't fool him, and he's in the backfield for a 2-yard loss. And the same kind of look that Aaron would give you, smiling like, hey, you got me once, but you're never going to get me twice. But Kuechly was like that.
It's great to talk to you. You got a smile on your face. Hopefully we got football coming up here.
We got our fingers crossed. So we hope that on November 7th, we can have a bratwurst.
Well, hopefully it's a victory bratwurst.
Yes.
Thank you, Coach. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, guys.
That's Chip Kelly, UCLA head coach. Yeah, getting started November 6th and 7th there in the Pac-12. You just hold your breath because there's no guarantees here. None whatsoever. But at least they're trying. And it goes back to what happened, you know, when I told you the news that Pac-12 and Big Ten were shutting down. I just didn't think that they tried hard enough. I didn't know what plan B or plan C was. It just felt like they looked at the data and said, we're not going to play football. It's not safe. I understand that. And taking the safety precautions and protecting these student athletes, that's what you're supposed to do. And not going to the bottom line of, hey, no matter what, we're going out there. Even if we run a risk here, we got to make money here. They didn't have that approach. But I wanted them to at least explore all options there. And that was the only knock that I had on both of those conferences. But they're going to try to make this work. They're going to play 6 games, 7 games. Then maybe there's a bowl game. Maybe somebody gets in the Final Four, at least consideration there. But where we are now, if we come back to this, revisit this topic in a month, who knows where we are? How many teams are going to have to postpone games? University of Houston has had 5 games postponed. I think they're undefeated, but they've had 5 games postponed. And it feels like when it happens, like I think a University of Charlotte ran out of offensive linemen and they couldn't field a team, something crazy. This is going to happen. It's going to happen in all of these conferences. It feels like we're going to have one of those moments where a team goes, can't play. And we shouldn't be surprised. It's like baseball. When I said, maybe you get everybody playing 60 games. Maybe. You sort of, all you want to do is get to the finish line. Baseball, all they wanted to do was whatever it took, come hell or high water, we want to get into the postseason. Because then we can, you know, bubbleize our players and our teams. We can quarantine them. We can control them a little bit more. That's all they cared about. NBA, all they cared about. Just put them in the bubble, don't let them out. You know, football's not able to do that. The NFL has done a great job, but they've been able to pretty much survey the entire landscape here. College football is going to have a very difficult time. Notre Dame canceling their game against Wake Forest. And then you're going to reschedule that. And, you know, the Pac-12 and Big Ten, they don't have bye weeks. If you have a game canceled, that's it. Game's canceled. You're not going to make it up. And then you're going to try to, you know, stumble to the finish line. And maybe you get a team that qualifies to play for the national championship. All right, we'll take a break. Back after this on the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. I made an executive decision here at 10:47 East Coast time. Let's get those brats off the trigger. Throw a little homemade mustard on there. We got some sauerkraut. This is pretty good. Yes, Paul.
I think I might miss tailgating as much as I miss the college football games themselves. Mm. Not being able to go to a tailgate this fall, it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
You can go to some games. There's places where you go to games, but the tailgating is almost eliminated.
McLovin, update the poll results if you can.
Should college football expand to 8 teams? It's up to 79% say yes. So everybody's down with this.
Yeah, I understand, but I don't know what's holding it up. If everybody understands during these times that if you can have more teams. Now, if you're going to have the bowl games, then it's different. They don't want to take away from the bowl games. Like they, I was told, you know, they have to have and maintain the bowl game schedule. But if you can get 8 teams in there, and everybody's going to qualify. So it's not like you have to win 6 games. But the integrity of those bowl games is at stake here, apparently. All right, let me see. So we'll talk to Michael Thompson, Laker radio analyst. He'll join us coming up. Pac-12, Mountain West, they're playing this fall. The Mid-American Conference will decide either today or tomorrow, from what I'm told. But it looks like they're going to try to do the same thing. Maybe play 6 regular season games and then do what everybody else is doing with the Pac-12 and Big Ten. And then have that 7th. Game, which is everybody playing on that weekend, like a championship Saturday. Must-win games this weekend for NFL teams. Also, I need the updated NFL MVP odds because my guy Kyler Murray is moving up here. Although Josh Allen might be a better investment. But McLovin, if you can find the odds there, because Kyler Murray has jumped a little bit. Back in August, he was listed as a long shot for the MVP. Now he's tied with Dak Prescott for the 4th best odds to win the MVP. But Josh Allen, I think, was because they're good. You have to win to be the MVP. Can you remember when an MVP, a quarterback, won the MVP and he didn't play on a playoff caliber team? Like you have to make the playoffs. Yes, McLovin.
So Russell is the favorite now at 350.
Yeah.
Then Lamar Jackson at 500. Patrick Mahomes at 550. And then it's a tie with Kyler Murray and Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
Are you a little nervous that
yes.
So Russell was 3rd coming in, I think. 2nd or 3rd. And now he's 1st.
Where is Josh Allen on the list for MVP?
Josh Allen is plus 2,500, right behind Cam Newton, who is right behind Kyler Murray. So Cam Newton is 6th, then Josh Allen 7th. That's early for Cam Newton. I didn't realize that was happening.
I didn't know that either. But where's Aaron Rodgers? Rodgers feels like he would be a good bet.
Well, okay, Rodgers.
I got Rodgers 4th here.
Yeah, you're right. I see Rodgers at 4th.
Oh, okay.
1400,
then he might not be a bargain. But if I was going to buy, I would buy Cam Newton and Josh Allen.
Sorry, I see Rodgers right behind Dak and Kyler. So in this list, I'm looking at six. Right ahead of, I jumped ahead with Cam and Josh Allen. But Josh Allen, don't the people expect the Bills to be a winning team now? Isn't that kind of where we land with them?
Yeah, but that's why he's an MVP candidate. If he puts up these good numbers, but they're not a win their division, then he's not going to be MVP. Kyler Murray has to make the playoffs. Yeah, McLovin.
Are the Bills a favorite in the AFC East now?
I think they are, but I don't know if those odds have been upgraded after what we saw with Cam the first 2 weeks. Not sure. Okay, must-win situation this weekend. And then we have to define what is a must-winish situation here. Is somebody going to lose their job? Is the team not going to make the playoffs if they lose this weekend? So Atlanta's 0-2, and they host Chicago. That feels a little mustish for Dan Quinn.
Yes, felt like we needed a little NFL music.
Thank you.
Mustish win weekend. Game breakdown.
Yeah, I would say Atlanta at home against the Bears, even though the Bears are undefeated, that feels a little mustish for Dan Quinn. Yes, McLovin.
But hasn't that ship passed? I think the Falcons are not even in a must-win because I think they're done.
No, for him to hold on to his job.
Even that, I don't think anyone takes them at all seriously.
Philadelphia at home against Cincinnati. Is that mustish for coach and quarterback to beat the Bengals at home? Yes, McLovin?
Try a whole city's morale. They just learned Jalen Reagor's out to November, too, the rookie wide receiver. It'll be chaos in Philadelphia.
Here's another one. Minnesota at home hosting Tennessee. Tennessee is the favorite going into Minnesota. Is that mustish for Kirk D. Cousins? Houston at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh favored by 4. That doesn't feel, I don't know. It feels like Houston will end up winning that division no matter how they start. Vegas at New England. What if New England loses that game? We're all caught up in Cam Newton and Bill Belichick's done it again. And if they go 1-2 and lose to Vegas, they're 6-point favorites, by the way. How about New Orleans hosting Green Bay? Is it if they would lose or how they would lose? If Drew Brees doesn't have another good game, big game, Aaron Rodgers comes in there and plays well, New Orleans is favored by 3. But without Michael Thomas, any other must-ish win games this weekend? Yes.
Just a quick note, 0-3 teams via stats, only 4 have made it since 1990. And the Texans were the last one to do it in 2018.
But we expanded the playoffs, though.
That's your point. So right. You might as well throw that out.
Yeah, you throw out the records. Yes, Tom.
What about the Broncos-Bucks? Are we already written off the...
okay.
What if they beat Tom Brady in the Bucks?
I think that's interesting. If the Buccaneers lose, are you calling the upset?
I am not calling the upset, but I do want to know what we think of Tom Brady and the Buccaneers if somehow they go into Denver and lose to a team that has all those injuries and no Von Miller, no starting quarterback.
All right, 2 hours in the books, 1 more to go. We're going to talk to Michael Thompson, 2-time NBA champ, Lakers radio analyst. We'll dissect what the Lakers did last night and look ahead to the NBA Finals as well. That's coming up, final hour, Dan Patrick Show.